Well, I rolled in from Chicago last night. Been up there for half a dozen days at another conference. You know I'm an education junkie, and this time I got to attend and I got to present to a really remarkable group of clinicians who are trying to do something to change the planet by helping people heal. And so thanks to every one of those clinicians that was there, and thanks to every one of the people that was at the podium giving information out. And one of the things that we talked about was a subject that we had on our show just a few weeks ago, and that are the effects of glyphosate, the effects of what you might know as Roundup. And this particular chemical has become really pervasive in our environment and is causing more problems than you can shake a stick at. And so if you could walk out in the garage right now and find a container of it, please don't pour it down the sink. Please call the toxic line at our garbage pickup service and have them direct you to where you can deposit toxins, because we're finding out that this stuff is causing real havoc. Well, you thought that was all there was, but the Environmental Protection Agency is considering an application by Dow Chemical Company to use a combination of glyphosate, the chemical in Monsanto's Roundup, with 2,4-D. 2,4-D is a highly toxic weed killer. And the reason that they're having to combine these two together is because of the fact that we have created resistant weeds. Our weeds have acquired resistance over time to withstand the glyphosate. They've survived to more and more fields, and now Roundup is unable to kill the super weeds that it created. Remember the promise they gave us back in the middle of the 90s when the genetically modified engineered foods started showing up? And remember, the GMO foods right this minute are fundamentally cotton. And you know, well, okay, I don't eat cotton. But the circumstances are, it's still affecting the land. It's still affecting runoff. It's still getting into the water supply. Corn, soybeans, and sugar beets. These are the primary ones where glyphosate is being used. And they called them Roundup-ready crops. Well, because of the fact that these superweeds have been created, and they said, oh, we'll use way less pesticides. And remember, the word pesticides is an overarching umbrella that includes herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, algicides, rodenticides. If it says "ide" in the word, you know it's designed to kill something. So when I use the word pesticide, we include in that term herbicides, because technically Roundup is an herbicide. So the nature of this particular herbicide, the way that it works, is it chelates minerals, it binds to minerals. And so when you get exposed to it, it binds to the minerals in your body as well and keeps those minerals from being able to be activated, minerals that we need for normal function. So instead of delivering on the promises of lower herbicide use and lessening environmental pollution, the glyphosate-tolerant crops have caused an increase in herbicide use. We've actually doubled the amount of herbicide that we use in this country over the last 20 years. So rather than taking a step back and reevaluating the genetically engineered crop strategies in the United States, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency are rushing to approve new GE crops in combination with Dow's AgroScience 2,4-D with glyphosate in a product called Enlist Duo, which would lead to a much greater use of 2,4-D and even greater environmental pollution. And you say, well, I don't eat GE foods, Eve. I'm here to tell you, you do. In fact, the average American is consuming 193 pounds of genetically modified foods every year. If you open up a pack of sugar and put it in your tea in the restaurant, you're eating genetically engineered foods. If you put ketchup on something in a restaurant, you're eating genetically engineered high fructose corn syrup. If you're drinking a can of soda pop that's got high fructose corn syrup in it, you can bet it's genetically engineered. And the problem is it's got glyphosate hooked onto it. So we look at the European standards. Europe only allows 0.02 parts per million. I said that wrong. 0.2 parts per million in their water supply. In the U.S., 0.7 parts per million in the water supply is allowed of glyphosate or Roundup. But in fact, in the corn crops, we could have 13 parts per million. 0.7 versus 13, a huge, big difference, more than 15-fold. And so when we look at the fact that this trace amount of glyphosate could be coming to you in the corn chips you give your kid after school, in the bowl of cornflakes your kid eats for breakfast. And so when we realize that that exposure that's happening all the time may in fact be contributing, and the evidence is mounting, and it's mounting remarkably, that this exposure to glyphosate is contributing to celiac disease and gluten intolerance. If you look at the chart of the increase of gluten intolerance, not just in the United States, but in the world, it is in exactly correlates to the number of pounds of glyphosate that's being put on crops. And so people say, oh, you know, eating a gluten-free diet is a fad. Well, it's hardly a fad, especially as we found the relationship between gluten and Alzheimer's disease. But we know now, and again, this is coming from interdisciplinary toxicology. This is not coming, you know, from People magazine. The quote, the active ingredient in the herbicide Roundup is the most important causal factor in the epidemic of celiac, sprue, and gluten intolerance. Why is that happening? Because it changes the bacteria in your gut. You've heard of the microbiome. You've heard the term microbiota. You've heard the term prebiotics and probiotics. But we're understanding better and better that this collection of bugs that are in our bowel and on our body and in our mouth and in our lungs and on our skin, all of these different populations of critters are there to benefit us. No, fecal microbiota is not a particularly good cocktail party conversation. But what happens is we realize that diet shapes the microbiota. And when we compare the diets of people who eat an indigenous diet with people who eat the naked carbohydrates that we have here in the United States and all the snacky foods, we see a huge, big difference in these bacterial environments. And that bacterial environment is being changed by glyphosate, but that's not the only thing that's going on. The deaths due to intestinal infection have increased more than 20-fold in the United States over the period of time that genetically engineered foods have been introduced. The incident of thyroid cancer. Now, when I first got in practice, I never saw a case of thyroid cancer. Never saw it in my practice. And yet, I've seen a half a dozen cases, even in my small practice, even in an area where that's certainly not the reason that somebody would be coming to me. Thyroid cancer incident and Hashimoto's and other autoimmune diseases of the thyroid are in huge increase. Acute kidney injury. Acute kidney injury has once again gone up sevenfold over the period of time that glyphosate has been used. End-stage renal disease, end-stage kidney disease deaths. Same thing. Coincidence? I kind of doubt it. Glyphosate appears to be a pathway to a whole bunch of modern diseases. If you're talking about a fourfold increase in celiac and death due to celiac disease in the last 50 years, it's pretty astounding. Well, how does this stuff work? The nature of glyphosate is it interferes with a pathway that allows us to metabolize these carbohydrates. And as a result, it doesn't allow the amino acid tyrosine to be released. Well, why would you care about that? Well, first off, tyrosine is the foundational amino acid to make your thyroid hormone. Some of you have heard of T4 and T3. Well, the T can stand for thyroid, but it also stands for tyrosine. Tyrosine is one of those aromatic amino acids that is the foundation of us being able to make dopamine. You've heard me say on No Nonsense Nutrition before that there is a direct correlation between exposure to pesticides and Parkinson's disease. That's no longer speculative. We know now that the more pesticides that people get exposed to, especially farmers and landscapers and, you know, people that are, you know, doing the mowing services where they're getting a lot of exposure to pesticides, people who work on golf courses, they have high rates of Parkinson's disease. Well, if you interrupt the body's ability to get tyrosine out of your food, if you don't have tyrosine, you can't make dopamine. You can't make epinephrine and norepinephrine. That's adrenaline and noradrenaline. Those are the chemicals of alertness. But you also can't pull tryptophan out. Everybody's heard of tryptophan. They hear about the Thanksgiving turkey is high in tryptophan. And, you know, if you eat a bunch of turkey, that's why you fall asleep. Well, that isn't really true. The reason that you fell asleep on the sofa on Thanksgiving afternoon is because you ate just too much food. But tryptophan, all these amino acids are critical. But tryptophan is critical to make the neurotransmitter serotonin. And serotonin has to do with feeling okay. Serotonin has to do with depression. It has to do with gut motility. It has to do with lots of things because it's also the source of melatonin, our sleep hormone. Melatonin gets made out of serotonin. Serotonin gets made out of tryptophan. So if you can't get tryptophan out of the food, you can't make enough serotonin. See, you too can learn chemistry just by listening to the radio. There is a factor in this epidemic. When we look at these elevated serum pesticide levels and the risk of Alzheimer's disease, they measured these metabolites of things like DDT. DDT has been out of our supplies for almost 40 years. And yet there's a 4+ fold increased risk for Alzheimer's disease for people that have the highest amount of the metabolite that is from DDT. Now, I grew up here in rural Florida. Pinellas County was rural when I was growing up. I went to a 4-room schoolhouse. The joke was nobody in the town was smart enough to get to the 5th grade. So the nature of living in that rural area where there were pineapple farms all around Pinellas County when I was growing up, the way that they controlled mosquitoes was with DDT. And so I actually have a photograph sitting on a picnic bench in the yard of the school while the mosquito sprayer was going by while we were eating our lunch. It was considered that safe. You know, the neighborhood kids I grew up with, we used to ride our bike behind the mosquito truck in the fog. We thought it was great fun. The joke, you know, the game was whoever coughs first loses. James was the one that always coughed first. James died at age 32. So when we look at these elevated serum pesticide levels and the risk for Alzheimer's disease, that ought to be enough reason to want to reduce your exposure to getting out a can of spray, whatever it is, every time you see something crawling across the carpet. But all we have to do is look to history. We look to history and we find out that way back in 1872... our old buddy Charles Darwin knew that there was a relationship that went on between the gut and our mood. He said, and I quote, came from the expressions of the emotions in man and animals, that book. This is Darwin's quote. The manner in which the secretions of the alimentary canal and of certain other organs are affected by strong emotions is another excellent instance of the direct action of the sensorium on these organs, the mind on these organs, independently of the will or of any serviceable associated habit. In other words, our digestive tract can change our mood. Well, what does that have to do with glyphosate? What it has to do with glyphosate is you get exposed to Roundup and these other pesticides, and it changes the gut microbiome, and that in turn affects anxiety and depression. We're thinking that depression is nothing but a deficiency of Prozac and anxiety is a deficiency of Xanax. No, that's not the case. The microbiota influence behavior. Behavior that influences anxiety and depressive behavior. They're associated with alterations in the gut flora. So now we're starting to look at the fact that depression may be an inflammatory disease. Depression's not a mental disease. It's an inflammatory disease. We've identified known sources of inflammation that mediate the pathway of the neurotransmitters in the brain. So not only can exposure to these compounds create gluten sensitivity, but exposure to these compounds can create what we consider to be a mental health problem. And yet we know depression is associated with chronic low-grade inflammatory response. Well, what's causing that inflammation? Some of what's causing that inflammation is the alteration in the biome, in the microbiota of the gut. You know, we keep thinking we're humans with bacteria living on us. I think it may be the other round. We're bacteria that happen to have a human underneath us. You've got 10 times more bacterial DNA than you have human DNA. When we look at these SSRI drugs that are used to treat depression, maybe the way they work is because they down-regulate certain pro-inflammatory compounds. And they increase anti-inflammatory compounds. Now, these inflammatory compounds are called cytokines. And so when we decrease tumor necrosis factor alpha and we increase an anti-inflammatory cytokine like interleukin-10, then that may be why SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the drugs that are used for depression, that may be why they work, is because they're actually working on an inflammatory pathway. Well, guess what? I use a probiotic. In fact, I took it this morning when I got out of bed. And that particular probiotic is one that does exactly the same thing. It decreases the pro-inflammatory compounds, and it increases the anti-inflammatory compounds. And remember, not every probiotic does that. You've heard me talk before that probiotics have a first name and a last name, and they're always reversed. Lactobacillus is the last name. Acidophilus is the first name. But then there's those initials that go with it. And so when you look on a box or a bottle of probiotics, you want to make sure you got letters and numbers after the name. I call it the license plate. That tells us the specific species that that bacteria is. And so when I looked up the research on LA1-4, I found out that LA1-4, as a Lactobacillus acidophilus, decreased the pro-inflammatory cytokines, increased the anti-inflammatory cytokines. That's a good thing. We know that depression is an inflammatory disease. The question is, where is the inflammation coming from? Is it coming from stress and trauma? Is it coming from diet? Is it coming from exercise or obesity or smoking or the microbiome? Well, it turns out gut permeability and the microbiome seem to have a huge amount to do with depression. And so when you start consuming fermented foods, you know, whether it's yogurt, whether it's sauerkraut, whether it's pickles that you made at home, we're putting in some of those good guy bacteria that help to modulate the brain activity. As soon as we see individuals who consume these fermented, especially fermented milk products like kefir and yogurt, and remember, we always want it organically because bovine growth hormone is given to over 80% of all the cows in the state of Florida. Bovine growth hormone makes a cow produce more milk. And in getting them to produce more milk, they get more infection in their teats. And so if they produce more milk, they also have to be given more antibiotics. Yeah, it's lousy, isn't it? It's really lousy. And so when we begin to look at these fermented milk products like kefir and yogurt, make sure that you get them organically and try to get them full fat. I mean, if there's one thing that happened when I was in San Francisco last month, it is that the, you know, fat is the enemy story has really been obliterated. The whole calorie story has really been obliterated. We really need to look at eating real food. But, you know, that's a message that you've been getting on No Nonsense Nutrition for this last almost decade that I've been on the air. Eat what occurs in nature. But now I don't want you to just eat what occurs in nature. I want you to eat what occurs in nature that doesn't have glyphosate on it. Because here we've got Dow trying to marry Monsanto and put these two chemicals together, the glyphosate together with 2,4-D. Where did 2,4-D come from? Well, it came from being a part of Agent Orange in Vietnam. When we look at creating 2,4-D mixed together with glyphosate in this product called Enlist Duo, and we want to spray it on a new breed of genetically engineered corn and soybeans. And remember, if it's a new breed, that means that Dow and Monsanto are going to require that the farmers buy the new seed from them. They can't use seed from the prior year's crop. They have to buy new seed every year. So this is how they develop the slavery of the farmer. You know, 2,4-D was introduced way back in 1946. But the EPA has failed to conduct anything close to a thorough risk assessment on 2,4-D. You know, it was interesting. The guy who's in charge of toxicology, essentially, for you and I, his title actually is Assistant Administrator for EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention. His name is Jim Jones, and I'm sure he's had more than enough jokes about that name, especially in that job. But they went to him, and because he's responsible for the safety reviews of chemicals that are used in everyday products, he was asked how many chemicals are so dangerous that the agency, the EPA, should give him a harder look in order to protect the public and protect the environment. And Mr. Jones said 1,000 chemicals currently need to be reviewed. I certainly believe that's understated because there's 87,000 chemicals that are listed in the Federal Registry, which include 19,000 pesticides. And yet, even 1,000 is a scary number when you say they are so dangerous they should be given a harder look. And Mr. Jones estimated that regulars can tackle about 20 of them a year. Cost about $1 million apiece, but about 20 of them a year they could do. So if no more chemicals came into the marketplace, they could get through that list 1,000 in the next 50 years. Oh, goody gumdrops, especially when 10 new chemicals per day, right, you heard me, per day, between 2,000 and 3,000 new chemicals are being released into the marketplace every single solitary year. Yeah, I know. It's supposed to be an upbeat show, but you got to learn how to protect yourself. And one of the ways that you can protect yourself is to go to the Environmental Working Group website or the Organic Consumers Association website, EWG.org or OCA.org, and sign the petitions that are going to the Congress, that are going to the FDA, that are letting people know that we don't want this stuff on our food. We don't want 2,4-D to be approved to be mixed together with glyphosate. They've already gotten 1 million signatures. They need to have 100 million signatures. And so there's nothing that's more important for you to do today because the window of opportunity for comment is only one more week. It ends on June the 30th. So you need to make your position known that you do not want these toxic chemicals sprayed on your food. So I thought, because the Environmental Protection Agency is there to, protect me, that they would step back. They would find a safety threshold. It hasn't happened. It hasn't happened because Well, you figure it out. We've seen severe toxicity of 2,4-D to the respiratory system. EPA ignored the inhalation toxicity risks. When we look at all of the different systems that are involved, we have to remember it's just not on the food that it's sprayed on. It's also on the people that live around those properties. You know, thyroid toxicity of 2,4-D was observed in an agricultural health study in an ongoing long-term, big-scaled epidemiological study that was funded by the National Cancer Institute. And what they did is they checked on 90,000 farmers and their spouses up in Iowa and in North Carolina. And it showed that 2,4-D was associated with a greater risk of hypothyroidism in the pesticide applicators. Didn't matter whether they breathed it or they got it on their skin. It turned around and sabotaged the way that the body makes thyroid hormones. I could go on and on, but I won't. We just need to understand that this has become a way bigger problem than we ever thought it would be. And it all comes back to looking at the core gut microbiome and energy balance. Because the biggest killer that we're, you know, headed for isn't even just heart disease. It's obesity. And as I said on the show 2 weeks ago, and remember, if you ever want to go back to a show, you can always go to the archives. And the archives are on Podomatic. You go to Podomatic, you type in Plews News, or you put in my name, Eve Prang Plews, and you're going to come up with 250 shows that have been archived on Podomatic. And they are searchable. So if you want to listen to 45 minutes on MSG, you can find an MSG show. But if you want to listen to the original information that I gave about glyphosate 2 weeks ago, it's there on the site. Well, why do we talk about obesity? Now we've talked about glyphosate, you know, creating celiac sprue and glyphosate affecting the thyroid. Oh, yes, we will go on. But what we found out is that when you reprogram these microbes in the gut, you can feed an animal the exact same diet, two different animals, the exact same diet, but what's different are the microbes in their gut, and one of the animals gets very obese as a result of the diet, and the other animal stays lean. And it doesn't have anything to do with what they're eating. It has to do with what's living in their gut. Because the nature of this microbiome gets altered, and therefore it alters the way that we take calories out of food. So our high-calorie, low-nutrient-density diet that is the most common in the United States gives a preferential advantage to a certain set of bacteria, the firmicutes, that allow the body to gain weight easier. And so as we increase the amount of good guy bacteria in our bowel, we actually change the way that we create abdominal fat. We change the way that we have weight gain. Unfortunately, even if we continue to eat the fast food diet. But this constant mutation of the microbiome as a result of taking in things like Roundup and the potential of taking in things like 2,4-D is really, really scary. Well, all of the inflammation, all the autoimmunity begins from the very first day. You know, in 2005, when EWG did that baby study, and they took 10 newborn babies that were born in Los Angeles, and they took their placental blood on the day that they were born, and they found out in these 10 babies there were 287 different toxic and carcinogenic chemicals the day they were born. You know, we don't have to wait for people to get sick. They're being born sick. You used to think the placenta was inviolate, that you couldn't get things to transport across the placenta. Well, that 2005 10-baby study really changed that Well, now what we're beginning to understand is that with the increase of cesarean births that are happening in the United States, about 32% of babies in the United States are now being born by cesarean, that when the baby doesn't come through the birth canal and get inoculated with the good bacteria that the mommy has, we see a very big change in risk for those babies. Not only do we see an increase in type 1 diabetes, not only do we see an increase in asthma, we see an increase in attention deficit hyperactivity as a result of cesarean birth. And of course, attention deficit hyperactivity disorders is now seen in 11% of children, a lot of overdiagnosis here. But the amount of drugs that are being given to these kids are now up in the $10 million range. There are some schools where more than 50% of the boys under 10 years old are on medications. But we've also found that the exposure in the birth canal to the bacteria from the mom, and it's not just the vaginal bacteria, it's also the digestive bacteria. Anybody that's ever been at a birth knows that the baby is being inoculated with poop as well as being inoculated with vaginal secretions. But what we found out is the incredible increase in risk of autism in children that are born from a cesarean birth versus a vaginal birth. We know that the older the mom is, the greater the risk there is for autism. But it's only recently that the stats have come to show us that there's an 83% increase in risk in elective C-section. And we know C-sections are necessary. We know there are high-risk pregnancies. We know there are labors where babies get in trouble right at the end, and the C-section is imperative. But we ought to be taking a swab and swabbing that baby the second that they come out of the birth canal. You know, licking the baby's nose and mouth, the very first thing that we should do when they put the baby on the mama's chest, but taking a vaginal swab and wiping it on the baby's skin and giving the kid an opportunity to get a good environment of bacteria before they get the environment that's in the hospital. You know, we look at autism spectrum, and we see that many autism spectrum patients have a history of significant antibiotic exposure, hospitalizations. They all have gut symptoms, abnormal food cravings, and very unique intestinal bacterial populations. That's all been demonstrated by studies. And so when we look at attention spectrum disorder, when we look at autism spectrum disorder, when we look at all of these things from depression all the way to hyperactivity, we see that there is a unique and characteristic relationship with the gut microflora, and that gut microflora can be aberrated not only by our food, but by these pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides that are showing up in greater prevalency all the time. So how do you avoid them? Well, remember, I've said before on No Nonsense Nutrition, if you're only going to buy one thing organic, make it butter. If you're going to buy two things organic, make it butter and all of your dairy products. And then go to your meats, because it's in the fat. This is where we store it. This is where we store it in the human body. You know, one of my mentors, Luke Chalton, I've spoken about before, Dr. Chalton, a freaking genius. I mean, I don't have to take my other hand out of my pocket to count the people that I know in my life that are true geniuses. And I definitely give that crown to Luke Chalton. You know, when I started to study homeopathy with Dr. Chalton almost 30 years ago, repeatedly he would say in that delicious Belgian accent that the cause of the problem was a toxin, that the cause of the problem was a virus. And I began to think that this bird was just going to give me that answer for anything I asked him. But 30 years later, I can quote Dr. Chalton when I say, what's the cause of this problem? It's the toxin, it's the virus. It's the toxin, it's the virus. Well, I'm here to tell you it's a toxin. and that toxin altering the gut microflora of children with autistic spectrum disorders and that of healthy children and affecting their mood is becoming more and more obvious every day, and it's becoming more and more obvious with the studies. So what else can you do? You know, I've recommended on the EWG site many times the little wallet card that you can get called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. The Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 acknowledge the dozen most toxic fruits and vegetables that we have in our environment. And these numbers are not coming from the Environmental Working Group. They're coming from the United States Department of Agriculture. USDA tested 32,000 different fruits and vegetables last year, and they wash them before they test them. And they're the ones that gave us the list that said strawberries and peaches and apples and celery and bell peppers, that these are the things that have the highest pesticide rate on them. And that if you never eat an organic pineapple or mango or avocado, we're not going to lose any sleep over it because it's rare for us to find pesticide residues on those foods. But if you haven't changed the butter and the cheese where these things can concentrate, especially if the cows are eating genetically engineered corn. You remember when all those people died from E. coli and the spinach a couple of years ago? The sheds where they processed the spinach were right down the road from a big feedlot. So now you feed these cows genetically engineered corn. Cows aren't supposed to be eating corn. Cows are supposed to be eating grass. So you feed them genetically engineered corn, and it alters their microbiome. Therefore, they mutate bacteria in their bowel. So when the cow poop is on the lot, ultimately some of it dries out, and it blows in the wind, and it blowed over to the sheds that the spinach was being prepared in. That's how they got the toxic E. coli. It wasn't on the spinach. It was on the air. Yeah. Sounds like a bad science fiction movie, doesn't it? But we want to understand that eating organically can give us a huge amount of protection. And even when we're eating out in restaurants, we can be more vigilant by eating protein and vegetables and protein, and staying away from those funky sauces that may be having genetically engineered corn syrup, etc. But when we promote this new chemical, 2,4-D, and we, you know, we hear the position that Dow Chemical makes about the fact that this is going to reduce chemical pollution, when in fact the evidence is that more pesticides have been applied to the fields and they drift to the nearby communities, as well as the sensitive environmental habits. You know, you look at what glyphosate has done to the water fleas, and you go, what do I care about water fleas? You better care about water fleas, because water fleas are the bottom of the food chain in the water, just like algae is. And you start affecting the water fleas, you affect everything that eats the water fleas, and then everything that eats what eats the water fleas, and you see where that's going. If we introduce 2,4-D resistant genetically engineered corn and soybeans, we're going to have way more spraying of 2,4-D all across the agricultural areas in the United States, particularly in the Midwest. So there will be more 2,4-D exposures via food and water and air. The communities near there are going to receive the heaviest brunt. There's no question about it. What are we going to do? Wait and see? Wait and see? When we have two heads, wait and see. We may not have time to wait and see. If the EPA approves this Enlist Duo products, it would expose eight times more 2,4-D than is now the case. And that's according to the United States Department of Agriculture. Independent estimates give us even more. So Americans' exposure to this toxic, very toxic herbicide would soar as a result. And we want to remember, it disrupts hormones. It disrupts reproductive functions. It elevates the risk of cancer, thyroid problems, Parkinson's disease. Who's the most vulnerable? Your baby. Who's the most vulnerable? Your pet. Pets and farm animals and wild animals don't know when and where a weed killer has been applied. If they wander into a 2,4-D sprayed corn and soybean field and roll on 2,4-D treated lawns and eat 2,4-D on foliage and drinking water contaminated with 2,4-D, then we get what we got this year, the monarch butterflies. Where are the monarch butterflies this year? They got a 90% reduction in the migration pattern of monarch butterflies this year. Why? They're eating these crops that have been sprayed with Roundup. That glyphosate affects their bodies. They're one of our primary pollinators. Excuse me, we got bees dying off. Now we got monarch butterflies dying off. What's going to pollinate these crops? Where are you going to get your apple and your almond from, organic or non-organic, if we don't have these animals there to pollinate these crops? So if we see toxicity to the reproductive system, toxicity to the thyroid, toxicity to the immune system, toxicity to the kidneys, do you see that there's not really a lot of good news here? I wonder why we don't go to Washington and march in the street with torches. It's coming to that. You know, we're willing to fight for the way that money is spent in warfare, but we're not willing to fight for the way that the money is spent for health. There's something wrong with that. Something real wrong with that. And so, yes, you can protect yourself. You can make a difference in your buying habits. You can make a difference by reading the labels. So I'm in this fancy hotel in Chicago. And they have the shampoo and the conditioner and the bath gel and the body lotion in the room, just like they do in all the high-priced spread hotels. And I turn around the bottle of the shampoo, and it's got the smallest print, and I have to say this honestly, I believe I've ever seen. I thought I knew what one-point print was. But it was so small, and I can see an eyelash on a gnat if I don't have my contact lenses in. And I couldn't read this print. It was so small. So I got my magnifier out of my travel bag. And I counted 61 ingredients in the shampoo. 61 ingredients. And you go, but Eve, it's shampoo, you're not eating it. Yeah, but you're spreading it on your skin and leaving it there for 5 minutes every day, 365 days a year, or once a week, whatever often the frequency is of your shampooing. But I really had a field day with what they gave me on the airplane. They gave me a bag of chips, and I turned over that bag of chips, and the first thing I saw at the bottom of the list were four coal tar derivative dyes, four different colors of dye to put in a cracker that's brown. Excuse me? The heck color was it going to be if you didn't put four dyes in it? 27 ingredients. It was a chemical feast. And I don't have to worry about them going bad. You know, those are foods you can will to your grandkids because they're never going to go bad because there's no food in them. So when you hear my alarm, I want you to understand we got a time window. We got a time window until June the 30th to sign these petitions and let the Environmental Protection Agency know that we do not want these things on our food. They're going to show up in your canola oil, your soybean oil, your corn oil, and your cottonseed oil. They're going to show up in your soy-derived protein. If you're using a protein shake and it says isolated soy protein on it, you can bet now that that's genetically engineered. It's going to show up in your beet sugar. It's going to show up in your high-fructose corn syrup. These ingredients are pervasive in processed foods. It'll also be present in your meat and your eggs and your cheese and your other dairy products. But those vegetable oils, we don't think about those. You know, glyphosate is already pervasive in our food supply. It's 83% of all the pesticides that are being used in the United States now. It may be the most biologically destructive chemical in our environment, and we're going to add another disruptive chemical to it. And you're going to trip over to the health food store and buy your organic corn chips and feel like you're real safe. But remember, that little kid that's in the cart next to you is going to be your congressman one day. And you better hope that their brain is working. Because it appears that there are some of them in Washington that their brain isn't working. So I don't want to look to the archives of toxicology to be my guiding light. I want to look to Mother Nature to be my guiding light. And so the first rule in detoxification is stop putting the trash in. Apples, celery, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, grapes, nectarines, peaches, potatoes, imported snap peas, spinach, strawberries, sweet bell peppers, kale and collards. All of those things we need to be buying organically because those are the dirty dozen. Those are the things that we found more than anything else have pesticides in that produce. You heard the list. Sweet bell peppers, strawberries, spinach, potatoes, peaches, grapes, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes, celery, apples, and imported snap peas and nectarines. And we want to remember the Clean 15. Asparagus, almost never sprayed. Avocados, cabbage, cantaloupe, cauliflower, eggplant, grapefruit, kiwi, mangoes, onions, papaya, pineapple, sweet corn, sweet potatoes. Clean 15. More of that on your plate. Eliminate the dirty dozen. And don't forget to pay attention to what you're putting in your house and on your body. Even though organic foods can reduce your exposure to pesticide by an astonishing 90% by the time that you're at the end of a week, you got to pay attention to the cosmetics and the shampoo and the stuff that you're spraying in your oven or on your counter. But if every time you see a critter crawl across the floor, you grab a bottle of spray, doesn't break down. It stays in your environment. You walk barefoot across that floor. You take it up through your skin. Your baby crawls on that carpet. It takes it up through the skin. Your dog rolls in the lawn, takes it up through their skin. No, I don't want to be paranoid. I still have to live in this world too, and I travel a lot and get to places where I have less control, but I mean, half of my suitcase is food. I protect what I can. But I think this is a place where activity matters. I think this is a place that we have to finish listening to the show and get rid of Mark, ready for Marco's World Music, and go to our computer and go to OCA, Organic Consumers Association, or EWG, and sign the petition and let the EPA know that we don't want 2,4-D added to Roundup, that we don't want this in our food. It's time for us to get the torches ready. We may have to end up in the street. This is Eve Prang-Plues. I'm your licensed nutrition counselor.